G'day everybody, my name's Glenn Hill.
And I'm Jacob Meyer.
Welcome to Tactical Tennis Podcast.
Today, we want to talk about how to adjust to different conditions.
This really came up as a result of Indian Wells, which has such an incredibly large variety or large range of playing conditions out there in the desert. You know, I think it's one of the weirdest tournaments in a way as far as the playing conditions go.
As far as playing conditions, I would definitely say it's the weirdest big tournament. You know, I mean,
yeah, sure. Okay,
I'm
fair
sure
enough.
Futures that are worse. You know, and we love Indian Wells. I came back, I came back like a week ago. It was a short trip for me this year. But the conditions are really, really different pretty much than anything else that we see on the tour, as far as I can tell.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that a little bit then.
Yeah. So here's the thing that jumped out at me. Players don't seem to know what the heck is going on. And I mean, I remember when I was younger and just as a fan, you know, watching the Indian Wells tournament as it's been growing and growing in status over the years. And it seems like each year I had a different idea of what the conditions were and of who was well suited to perform out there. And what really stood out to me this year is that it wasn't just me that had little bits of confusion about this. The tour players themselves had wildly different ideas about what was going on out there.
Right. I remember you mentioning that a couple of guys thought that they were struggling with the altitude, which is funny because Indian Wells is at like 97 feet above sea level, which for the non-metric people out there, or I should say for the metric people out there, which is most of the rest of the world, that's like 30 meters above sea level, which is negligible. I mean, you can't really call that altitude. But, you know, there's conditions out there or some aspects of the conditions that make it play more like it's at altitude for people who maybe don't always understand the fine details of how different playing conditions can affect ball height and the way the ball behaves. And that's kind of important because we would assume that these professionals would know all this stuff and would have a good handle on what happens when it's dry, what happens when it's humid, what happens when we're at altitude, what happens when, you know, it's hot or cold. But the reality is a lot of them don't. I mean, I think a lot of the best players have, you know, good kind of compensatory mechanisms, good ways to deal with this. They have a pretty decent understanding. But
they're just phenomenal players. But they've got no idea about what's really happening out there outside of, you know, the ball sails or the ball is slow. That's pretty much the only thing that they talk about. But I had three different guys approach me and complain about, oh man, you know, this altitude's killing me. And it's like, oh man, that really sucks for you because, you know, it's less than 30 meters. I can't imagine what would happen if you went onto a mountain.
Right.
And then the second irony of that is that these are guys who actually do not play any altitude tournaments. Like they don't go down to Bogota and play the ATP event down there.
Right, because it's not really a ton of ATP events throughout the year that actually are really at genuine altitude.
No, there's like two, maybe. I mean, there's Bogota and I think maybe Quito. There's just not many of them. There's got to be some stuff in Europe that I haven't been to. And there's a couple of challengers that are at maybe like 400 meters, 500 meters, which probably has some effect, but you're still using the same balls.
Right.
So in the desert at Indian Wells, right, this is what I think we care about this week. The court itself is a little bit different. It's like a fine grit sandpaper. It takes spin really, really well. But somehow, guys are complaining that the ball is sailing on them. Okay? So, can we piece together from the reaction of the players and what we know that the physical court is, what the conditions are?
Sure. I mean, certainly we can talk about what some of the options are. I mean, it depends. And this is what makes Indian Wells so interesting is that the conditions change, the playing conditions change there from day to day or can change from day to day. And when we look at ball behavior, you know, ultimately there's really a few things that can change the way a court plays or the ball behaves in the sense of, you know, we can have a change in altitude, a change in temperature, change in, goodness gracious, what was I about to say? humidity, right, would be the other big one.
That's the other big one. Yeah.
Right. So, but in effect, all three of these have kind of come from a similar place, right? So when we think about the ball traveling through the air, you know, it's traveling through a gas, and there's air molecules in there, and the density, the thickness of the air will impact how quickly the ball goes. It's kind of like the difference of running your hand through water or running your hand through a big pot of honey. Well, your hand's going to be a lot harder to drag through the honey. It's going to be a lot slower because the honey's thicker, right?
So this is the thing, right? Like, you're going all physics on me here, which I'm not terrible at physics, but for those of you listening, this guy actually has degrees in physics. And it's like, okay, we're hitting through a gas. But it's not like we're hitting a tennis ball through a swimming pool. We're hitting it through the air.
Right.
I mean, how big of a difference does this really make? Can guys really feel this, or are they just talking out of their ears?
No, I mean, look, it absolutely can make a noticeable difference. It all depends on your scale. So with these guys, we're talking about people who are making a living playing tennis. And their sensitivity to even a few extra inches of ball flight is probably a lot higher than your average recreational player. I shouldn't say probably. Like, it just is a lot higher than your average recreational player. And playing conditions have the ability to affect ball flight to the degree of multiple inches, if not a foot or two, if you know, you have multiple factors combining. So coming back to what I was saying, you know, as we change the condition of the air or the thickness of the air, if you want to think about it that way, then it's going to change how far the ball flies. You know, when the temperature increases, then air density actually goes down. When humidity decreases, then the air density goes down. And also when we increase the altitude, air density goes down. So those three factors will all have basically the same effect. If we have increasing temperature, increasing altitude, and decreasing humidity, the ball will travel further on the same shot hit at the same trajectory than it would under different playing conditions.
Okay, so this is where I have the question. The altitude did not change. We're at 97 feet in Indian Wells.
Sure.
That's not adjusting, okay?
Right.
When we showed up for practice before qualies, it's hot. And it's not humid at all. Like it's pretty much a dry day. It's a really dry day. I mean, you're in the desert. Palm Springs is
exactly
the desert. Okay, and so then, especially, I shouldn't call them the grinders. I'm gonna say especially the guys that really like to hit kind of higher and heavier from the baseline. Okay,
mm-hmm.
They were like, "Darn it, everything is going a meter long."
Right. And that's because you've got the two factors coming into play there, where you've got heat and very low humidity because you're playing during the daytime in the desert. And so when you combine those two together, the ball is definitely going to travel further. And that's going to make it feel like you're playing at altitude.
So the implication here, and this is why I think we're talking about this today, is that you've got guys that are top 200 in the world, sometimes a lot higher than that, who are going out and doing exactly the same thing to hit the ball under these conditions, and the ball is consistently not going where they want it to go. And here's the striking part. They are at a loss for what to do.
Well, I think it's less that they're at a loss to what to do, as opposed to they don't have a good understanding of why things are the way they are. For these guys, you know, the solution's usually pretty simple, which is they're just going to go and get their racket strung a little tighter. And that, you know, that tends to be the adjustment mechanisms that the professionals use, is just changing equipment conditions to match the playing conditions. You know, it's like, well, back in the day, and I'm still, some players do this, of, oh, you know, you're at Wimbledon and new balls are coming out. Well, I'm going to go get a fresh string job. Or if I was Roger Federer back a few years ago, I remember he would get a fresh string job like one game before the new balls came. Yeah, and this is just it's the same kind of thing as adjusting for these environmental conditions or factors. You know, the balls will change their flight pattern as they start to wear. You know, like the US Open ball, for example, will first puff up, it'll get larger and actually kind of slower, and then as you start to lose the fair on it, it'll start to get faster and faster and faster again. So this is what pros will tend to do.
That doesn't happen on the tour, by the way.
Right, yeah, no, I'm talking for the average player, you know.
For because they're only using them for 9 games.
But right, like, no, exactly.
In practice, we experience the same thing.
Yeah, so this is what most pros do, is they just change their equipment. Because for them, especially the higher-ranked guys, it's not a big deal to just say, okay, go and cut out these $150 worth of strings and redo all of these by, you know, 3 hours from now, 2.5 pounds lighter, please, or tighter.
The stringing team isn't generally all that excited when they only give them 3 hours, but yeah.
Right, no, but I'm just as an example, like this can happen. Like, oh, I'm in the, you know, if you're Roger Federer, you're Rafael Nadal, Novak Djokovic, you're in the middle of your match and, you know, the temperature starts to drop and you feel like playing conditions have changed, you literally could be handing one of your rackets to a ball kid and getting that racket restrung and getting it back like during your match, you know. Now, part of the reason we're talking about this is I'm just going to go out on a limb and guess that for the average listener, doing something like that isn't a possibility. That, you know, restringing your rackets from day to day in response to the weather conditions that are coming up, or even during a match, is simply not feasible on average. Certainly you don't want to spend the money, and probably most of you don't have, you know, stringers are just sitting around who can do that turnaround with any sort of quality.
I don't even think that's feasible for me.
Right. So, you know, that's part of what we want to do is talk about other strategies and other ways, and if we have an understanding of why the ball behaves the way that it does, under different conditions, then we can try to adjust for it, right?
Yeah, and I mean, that's the one element of it is, of course, you know, well, what can we do? The other side of it, as far as I'm concerned, is I get a little bit frustrated that, you know, Rafa is going to send rackets in to get strung tighter instead of just adjusting how he's hitting the ball.
Right.
Like, for God's sakes, mate, you're Rafa. I mean,
yeah, you'd think, you not, can not, you'd do think anything. Obviously, he has the control to just make small adjustments, but.
I would think so. You know, like, I don't think he needs 2 weeks of practicing on site in order to, like, figure, you know, like, I think he can make that adjustment after one or two balls.
Right. I mean, the guy's certainly athletic enough, and yeah, I mean, he's operating at a very, very high level. So let's talk about what those adjustments would look like, right? And this is where part of the trick comes into play, is that you have, you know, like I said, multiple things that will have an impact. And so you have environmental factors. And, you know, typically the temperature's not going to change wildly during a match, but it can happen. Humidity shouldn't change a lot during a match.
Right. In Indian Wells, that's one of the things, like, especially if you're one of those like 6 o'clock slots.
Oh, absolutely.
The weather changes dramatically because at night it's cold out there and in the day it's boiling.
Sure.
And so if you're in that transition period.
Oh, over the course of 3 hours, it could be incredible. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Even, you know, in a 2 hour, 3 set match, that third set could be literally different tennis. How the match started.
No, absolutely. Yeah, so humidity's usually not going to change a lot. When we look at the major factors, we would hope altitude wouldn't change during a match, because if your altitude changes during a match, you've got more than tennis to worry about.
That's called an earthquake.
Yes, well, yeah. I'm not even sure an earthquake would cover that one. That's called, like, formation of new volcanic island. you know. But you've either dropped the long way or you've raised the long way. Either way, you're in trouble. So we're not expecting altitude to change. We wouldn't expect humidity to change dramatically over the course of 2 or 3 hours. That's typically not going to happen. That would be a very unusual weather pattern, even in the desert.
But it will change from, say, my Monday match to my Tuesday match.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it could change. Yeah, you know, that could be the difference between like a hot sunny day, and if the next day is going to be, you know, maybe rain incoming, your humidity could jump 25, 30, 40, 50%. Who knows, you know? So day to day, some of these things can change, obviously. And then temperature, it all depends on really where you are in the world and what time of day you're playing. So if you're in Indian Wells in the middle of the day, you're going to have a fairly consistent temperature profile throughout the course of your match. If you're at Indian Wells and your match starts at 6 p.m., all bets are off because you might start the match out, you know, sweating in your shorts and finish the match cold in your sweatpants. There's just no telling. So, you know, some of these things you have to be able to adjust for during the match. And then obviously you have the ball conditions changing as well. And so if we talk about making adjustments with our game instead of with equipment, then we have to know what's going on so we know how much of an adjustment to make and hopefully make it as the match progresses or from day to day.
So I've worked with a bunch of challenger guys. And so I'm a big believer in being self-reliant.
Right. Because the challenger guys don't have the resources. Maybe that's something worth mentioning really quickly.
Yeah. Like we're, as Indian Wells didn't work out for us this year, we're up in Canada outside Montreal right now at the Drummondville Challenger. Right. So, you know, there's one guy stringing rackets. You can't send, three rackets over to him and say, hey, get me these back at the, two changeovers from now, because it's one guy. You know, in Indian Wells, they've got a team of people, and so they can have three different people stringing racket all at the same time, and they're back in 15 minutes. That's not happening at Challengers. It's just not a possibility, right? And, you know, there's just not as much money going into everything. So what we teach is don't rely on those things. You have to be able to win with what you have right now.
Right.
So, you know, how does this really sound to you? Because what I tell them is this, like 90% of this is just about thoroughly understanding all the different ways that you control the height of your ball.
Yeah, exactly. That's ultimately what it comes down to, is controlling the height of your ball is the single most effective way to adjust for environmental changes. Because when you control the height of your ball, what you're effectively controlling is the trajectory, and that is the best way to adjust your distance. You know, because when we talk about the impact that, you know, let's say more heat or less humidity has on ball, it's simply going to travel further for the exact same trajectory. And the simplest adjustment to make if we're not going to change equipment is to lower the trajectory slightly compared to the ball that we would normally hit under, let's just say, our quote-unquote normal circumstances, whatever those might be. Right. And how much we lower it is going to depend on how dramatic the environmental changes are. So, for example, at Indian Wells, if I'm playing a match there and I start at 6 p.m., and let's just say that it is, 28 degrees Celsius, like in the mid-90s as an example. I'm just pulling these numbers, kind of out of thin air here. And then over the course of this match, the temperature is going to drop down to, 12 degrees Celsius, which would be somewhere, I think, in the low 60s. I'm going to have to make some adjustments as that match goes on. I can't hit the ball the same height throughout the course of that match. Not exactly. Or if I do hit the ball the same height, I cannot do it with the same spin profile, right?
Right.
I would have to hit the ball, hit a heavier ball at the same trajectory and make an adjustment that way. But generally speaking, I think it's a lot easier to just make a small height adjustment than it is to make a spin adjustment for most players.
And here's the qualifier to that. It's pretty, it's pretty tough to ask a player, oh, hey, you have to hit the ball 10 miles an hour harder on every shot today. Well, if they could do that with consistency, they're probably doing it. Most of us essentially hit as well as we can,
right,
in a way that we also can, play the game and make good strategic decisions and whatnot. So it's not that we don't adjust the speed, and it's not that we don't adjust the spin, but it seems that those are sort of less variable to some degree. They're going to be more consistent from day to day. And, we're used to adjusting. Like, obviously, if you're hitting a ball from the service line versus from 3 meters behind the baseline, the court's a lot smaller that you're hitting into. So you're going to hit the ball farther back a lot harder, and probably a lot higher for that matter.
Right, and the higher hat is, I think, the really important thing. Because, I mean, let's face it, these guys are top 200 in the world. You don't get to be top 200 in the world, typically, while holding 10 miles an hour on your ground strokes back. I mean, if you're doing that, then you're doing very well indeed. But so these guys are, they're always trying to maximize performance. And so, you know, generally speaking, on balls that aren't, like, way, way below the height of the net, like, they're going to hit that ball incredibly hard, both when they're short in the court and when they're deep in the court. But what is going to change is the trajectory at which they hit the shot. So the trajectory changes are something that professional players are very used to making. I mean, and recreational players too. But you know, you have a choice of in how you want to make that adjustment. Whether you're going to just hit the same shot and hit it a little bit lower, or hit the ball a little bit heavier. You know, we saw that a little bit, like in Stan's match last night, for example, against Nishioka, where you know, partway through that match, he started going high and heavy. I think, you know, partly in a result of a kind of a tactical adjustment, but also partly because of conditions. But regardless, you know, like he started going high and heavy, and it's a little bit different of a ball than he normally would hit. So these adjustments are adjustments people certainly make for a variety of reasons. But, you know, this is how we want to handle playing conditions. Let's talk about how much really is realistic to adjust, you know?
Yeah, because what I was actually going to say is one of the things that has struck me now about this as we talk about the different conditions in Indian Wells is the massive juxtaposition of the Miami tournament and Indian Wells. Because Miami is hot and humid, but when we go down there, I mean, we just absolutely slug the ball.
Right.
And nobody has a problem hitting it over the baseline. We're just slugging the ball as hard as we can. And the clay quarters do a lot better down there. And it's not because of the crowd. It's because they can hit the ball. They can just throw it up there and, you know, they don't miss. Whereas if they hit like that in Indian Wells, they've got no chance.
Right.
And so in Indian Wells, it seems like it punishes you if you're not as precise and if you don't have that height control. And moving forward, you have to aim a lot shorter and a lot lower. And, you know, there's an added element, basically, a different style of play. I love those courts because I think that they are, to some degree, they're kind of equalizing. And to some degree, they really reward the better player. So if you can make the right adjustments, like you can play really, really great tennis out in Indian Wells. I think that's why we see so many great matches out there. And you're much more likely to just, like, grind matches out in Miami.
Sure.
But, you know, how... what do we think about? What do we focus on if we're having this problem of saying, okay, like I'm consistently hitting the ball, whether it's an inch out or a meter out or 4 meters out, it doesn't really matter. I check my height and I realize, well, I'm pretty high. Like there's lots of space between where the ball crosses the net and where the net is. What am I looking at? Like, what do I need to be thinking about?
Well, so there's a couple of different strategies here, and I think the typical one that I think is the most effective is focusing on how high the ball is when it crosses the net, because that's the one point at which you have a very clear frame of reference visually to be able to make adjustments with. You know, so if I hit a shot, and let's say it's going a meter out, and it's kind of a shot that I would normally hit, and I hit that and it flies on me, and I'm thinking, wow, that was odd. Why did I miss that shot? You know, the first thing I'm going to think about is, well, what's changed? Is it something different with my playing conditions? You know, and if I am playing under conditions that are maybe a little bit drier than usual or hotter than usual or whatnot, you know, the very first adjustment is always going to be, well, I'm going to take that shot that I just hit and basically assuming that I have at least, you know, a foot to do is I'm going to take it a foot, which should be about 30 centimeters lower over the net, and see how that ball behaves.
Right.
Right. And that's generally, I'm going to start making adjustments about 1 foot at a time. And what you want to kind of do is bracket it. So, you know, we don't want to go absolutely crazy here. The last thing you want to do is go drop, you know, like three feet of height over the net. Because if I drop the height of the ball over the net by 3 feet, that's going to have more than a 3 foot difference in how far it's going to travel, right?
Yeah, way more.
If I drop it 3 feet, if I drop it 3 feet, you know, which is about 1 meter, that might affect how far the ball travels by 2, 3, 4 meters or, you know, 6, 8, 10 feet. And that's kind of a big deal. So, we don't want to go too crazy. You want to start with making noticeable but relatively small adjustments. And because realistically, that's about the frame in which you need to be. If you need to adjust your height by more than 1 foot as a result of a change in these playing conditions, then I would suggest there's probably more than just the playing conditions going on. You know, maybe something about the balls and or your strings that are also having kind of a compound effect. You know,
yeah, we actually left that out, that we haven't talked about the balls. You do get some variation in the balls, and if the balls are lighter, you can have the same sorts of issues.
Oh, and changing from one brand to the other is also, yeah. I mean, it could have a huge impact, you know?
Well, different brands of balls have different weights to them. They have a range that they all have to be within, but if you're on the bottom of that range versus the top of that range, there's like, I mean, there's a real palpable difference.
Oh, absolutely. And even let's say within Dunlop or Penn or Wilson, you know, they have different weight balls even within those brands. So, you know, just because I'm using a quote-unquote Wilson ball doesn't mean that they're all going to be the same. Like a Wilson US Open is not the same as, you know, I'm trying to remember one of the other Wilson balls. It's been a long time since I used anything other than US Opens because of college. But yeah, so, you know, these things all have an impact. So, you know, if I'm playing with balls that are flying, you know, the first impact or the first change adjustment I'm going to make is to aim about 1 foot lower over the net. You know, if I start or I'm still struggling with that, after making some height adjustments, you know, my next play is typically going to be to add more spin, specifically more top spin, and, you know, try to get things under control that way. You know, we don't like going to that as your go-to because that has trickle-down effects in my game. You know, if I make a small height adjustment and start hitting the ball a little bit lower over the net and end up with the same outcome as I would have when I normally play, then I'm
have to be a different player.
Yeah, I'm basically hitting the same type of ball, which is going to, you know, travel through the air at roughly the same speed, even if it goes, you know, a little bit shorter than it might normally do. You know, it's going to have kind of the same spin profile. It'll keep the same rhythm and cadence to the rally, and I'm going to kind of be within my comfort zone more. If I start changing my spin profile on the ball, I start hitting a heavier shot, well, now I'm actually just playing like a different player because I'm inevitably giving up ball speed to get that spin.
Yeah.
Sorry, I cut you off like three times there or didn't let you
or
interrupt.
Or vice versa, more like I interrupted.
You tried. You tried, but I valiantly rebuffed you. But yeah, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, if you've listened this far, you know, kudos for putting up with us. But it should strike you that adjusting the height of your ball by a third of a meter, you know, moving your height over the net by a foot or less than a foot or maybe a little bit more than a foot, it might actually be a hard thing to do. I don't think that most of us practice with intent, right, how to vary my height of the ball over the net by less than 1 foot increments. I mean, mostly we practice either hit it really low or hit it really high with spin, or you just hit whatever your sort of rally ball is, whatever that is for you. But most of us don't go out there and practice our height. And so to say, hey, let's bring your whole game down by 1 foot. And if you can do that right away, then right away you're fine and you're going to not have any problems in the conditions. Well, I think that there's a sense in which this could be a difficult thing to do because if we assume that the player doesn't understand that this is what needs to happen, we can assume they probably have not practiced this, then we're kind of asking them to do something that they don't expect, that they're not prepared for.
Right. I mean, I think for the average player, typically I'm not going to be like, aim the ball 1 foot lower. It's going to be, let's just try bringing it open the net a little lower or aim a little shorter in the court. You know, sometimes in tennis, we end up asking for something that we don't necessarily want or expect to actually happen in order to get what we want. So I might tell somebody, look, I want you to hit it shorter. You know, like aim, I've told players this before a match, so I'm pretty sure you have too, like aim for the service line, with the understanding that there's no way they're actually going to hit the service line with the type of ball that they're hitting. But just by getting them to aim for the service line, suddenly they're hitting the ball 5 feet past the service line, and, you know, we're in the range that we want to be in.
I actually talk about aiming for the service line a lot, which I don't think we've spoken about that, so you probably couldn't really know that.
No, I just assumed.
And I think, well, that's pretty good. And I think that this is why Novak Djokovic has historically done so well in Indian Wells, because naturally he likes to hit the ball really low over the net, and he likes to basically aim for the service line.
Well, I think also his depth control is very good.
Yeah, he's basically spent his whole career going from hitting those shorter, flatter balls to hitting basically a bigger ball that then is a little heavier, and he tries to put the ball on the baseline. Like, he actively tries to hit every ball on the baseline. That's what he tries to do. He's not spreading the court. He's hitting the baseline.
Right.
So,
and that takes a lot of control, obviously.
I mean,
the guy can go out and just put the ball within inches of the baseline just over and over again.
It's a joke. Like, warming up with him is just like, oh, okay, I'm not a good tennis player. I got it now. But the thing is, like, in Indian Wells, I think he can basically relax and swing more freely and bring the ball down. And he just can say, well, I don't have to aim for the baseline now. I can just aim for the service line and I can just rope it. And it's just like, the ball goes almost where he wants it to go, which is actually closer to the baseline, but he's not aiming there as much. It's a little bit of a weird thing. But so I think, you know, I think we'd see a different Novak if he had like really, really slow conditions over there. But again, he can hit through slow conditions, so it doesn't hurt him that much.
No, we've seen it. Well, I think one thing that Novak is really good at is making those small adjustments in height. Like, I think his depth control is very precise. Far more so than most players. You
his
know.
Depth control is, I'm going to say it's the best on the tour.
Right.
I can't think of anyone who's really even close.
Right. And I think you're absolutely right about that. So,
and he does it, I should note, he barely has any variation in topspin.
Right. Yeah, no, he hits a very similar ball. I mean, he certainly can put more spin on the ball when he wants to, but sure. Yeah, absolutely. Like, he's very consistent with the type of contact that he gets. But so when we expand this out and start talking about other players, you and I have been talking about trying to make adjustments to how high over the net we're hitting the ball. But for a lot of people, like I said, that's not something you practice and not something maybe that necessarily will translate well. And so the simpler adjustment simply is to pick a different target, because we all have, different targets that we hit. Like if my opponent's up on the net, I'm not going to hit the same ball to them that I would if they're standing on the baseline or the service line, right? So, if I think about the typical shot that I might hit towards somebody's feet when they're standing on the service line, well, if I'm consistently hitting the ball long under, let's say, drier or hotter or higher altitude conditions, my first adjustment, if I don't feel comfortable kind of bringing the ball down 1 foot, might be, well, I'm going to start to hit my service line ball, that ball that would be at the feet of somebody who's kind of in transition, and see where that lands, and then make adjustments from there. And I think it's important at this point just to say that, your brain is an absolutely incredible thing. It is able to take, all the data that it's getting, all the information it's getting from you while you're doing things such as playing tennis, and, extrapolate that data and make adjustments at a rate that, is beyond your ability to really make explicit. So if you make some of these small adjustments and, maybe bring the ball shorter for a little while, and then play in that space, you will automatically start to make adjustments to, your depth control and kind of reset and recalibrate to that, kind of more adjusted or shifted aim point. And pretty soon you'll find yourself just playing like normal. It's not something you have to think about constantly for an entire match, right?
And that's key.
Yeah, no, it's just about making that adjustment early. And, like if you fly a couple long, just bring that ball in by a lot and just play in that space for a little while, and then just you'll be able to relax and not think about it anymore. If you keep going for your line and then you keep hitting 3 or 4 feet long, well, yeah, it's going to become a big thing. You're going to get frustrated. You're not going to be playing well. And then you're going to start to have real problems. So
I've literally seen guys that were top 100 in the world struggle with this because they've been taught their whole life to hit the ball at a certain height, because that was part of how they learned topspin, right?
Right.
And
they've just dialed it in. They've done it so many millions of times.
Yeah, and they're dialed in for this ball that they, they can hit these great shots, but they're dialed in at this height, and literally they were so, we got so focused. This is like, it's easy to get frustrated, obviously, when we're playing, and they got locked into this idea, and they don't realize Oh, well, I'm not making the easiest adjustment that there is for me because I never think about height because basically they're always trying to do pretty much the same one.
Right. So,
So.
good point to wrap up, I think, and just kind of summarize really quickly. So, we're looking at heat, humidity, and altitude, as well as obviously the tennis balls, and your strings may change from day to day. And the adjustment, we've got really two choices here if kind of adjusting your equipment isn't the big one. And just really quickly to touch base on that, you know, most of the time the adjustments the pros are going to make is to bring the tension up or down a couple pounds based on the playing conditions. So if, you know, if it's hotter or drier or their altitude and the ball's flying a little bit, they're going to tighten those strings up a little bit, which doesn't actually change the power out of the racket, but what it does do is change the launch angle slightly. So if I tighten my tension, the ball's going to come off at a slightly lower angle. If I loosen my tension, the ball's going to come off at a slightly higher angle. You know, that's one of these big misconceptions. Probably it's a whole podcast in and of itself, is about
Yeah,
the
I
actual
like how you just
science.
threw that in the last
Major,
minute,
yeah, I
you
know,
know?
like major
Like,
mind-blowing thing about tennis
sure,
string.
everybody understands string physics, no big deal.
Yeah, but so we can, that's the adjustment that the pros would typically make. It's something that you can do if you're planning out ahead of time. Let's say that, you know you're traveling to a particular city for a tournament and you know it's drier and hotter there. You know, you can
Yeah,
certainly go
but
and get your racket strung up a couple pounds tighter.
just don't do that. Just practice your height.
Well, that's a bigger picture thing is there's a skill set that is worth developing that will just help you win more matches.
You'll
So,
be a better player.
right. So either start adjusting your height or alternatively, if you're not comfortable with that adjustment, start aiming shorter in the court, you know, overcorrect a little bit and let yourself kind of settle in and groove in that space and you won't have to worry about it for the rest of your match.
Yeah,
That's all I
do those
got.
things. My last bit of unsolicited advice here is it's easier, I think, to practice your height not while you're playing points. So we do it every single day that we play tennis. We practice our height when we volley, which isn't the same thing. But if you're just thinking about it when you volley, oh, how high is this ball over the net? Then it becomes second nature pretty quickly. I mean, it takes my guys like a couple of days to a week to learn this skill, and then they have it forever. So
Fair enough.
that's what I say.
Well, I say that if you have any questions or comments, then shoot us an email. I'm Glenn at, with one N, that's important, Glenn at tactical.tennis.
You should just change your name, bro. I'm Jacob at tactical.tennis, and mine's pretty easy.
Yeah, no, not happening. And then you can also obviously follow us on Facebook. You know, please forward us on to your friends, share. You know, the more people we reach, then the more we can do. And we'll look forward to next time.
Thanks, guys.